Coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast, it was Mother Nature versus the Players Championship, and I think Mother Nature won out. We had some Monday chaos that led to a mullet-filled victory. Plus, we're examining Tiger's Hall of Fame speech and the LPGA stays going low. We're tuned into all things South By and a new series on Hulu. And this week's guest is friend of the show, returning guest, pro bowler, and recent PBA Tour champion Marshall Kent, breaking down his big win. And always, we've got Tom Brady news, so I'll be addressing it. Welcome to everything that we do here on the Course of Life. We're talking St. Paddy's Day and Bobcas when we always end with food. And all of it is brought to you by our friends at Desert Fox Golf, the makers of the Phone Caddy. They've been our longtime go-to sponsor and friends of the podcast. We tell you about them each and every episode because I truly can't get over how convenient the Desert Fox Phone Caddy is. And what bugs me, Mike, is that I don't see these things everywhere. I think if you're a golf club or you're someone who's running a golf event at a course where you're gathering lots of golfers, what better gift is there than just a wonderful device that helps keep everyone's phone exactly where they need to be seen? And that's what the Desert Fox Phone Caddy does. And it's even more affordable with our promo code, which is Course of Life. So promo code Course of Life at DesertFoxGolf.com will get you 10% off your purchase of any phone caddy. They got a variety of colors and designs. You can even customize your own. Again, promo code Course of Life to save 10% at DesertFoxGolf.com.
Interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Read Podcast Network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf, Tosi Stacks, Club Doctor Golf, and Volvic. I'm Michael, he's Alex. And Alex, it was an extended weekend down at TPC Sawgrass with gale force winds, freezing temperatures, rain every day. Mother Nature really kind of got up and said, hey guys, you don't really want to play a golf tournament this weekend, do you? Somehow they got it all in, and we had one of the most chaotic Monday finishes I think we've ever seen. 30 holes. It was certainly one of the most exciting finishes to a golf tournament we've seen in some time. And in the end, Cam Smith, the Australian with the mullet, took it home in what, like $3.5 million?
I think it might have been 3.6. Don't shortchange him.
That's right.
Cam Smith, pretty selfless guy. He's mentioned that before. But yes, the mullet really getting it done now. He's officially legit. The mullet is here to stay. It's funny, when he originally won with the mullet, he'd said his girlfriend's not a huge fan of it and asked him to cut it. And then at that point, you remember he didn't cut the mullet after then and just kept playing better and better. So I think the mullet is here to stay. But the highlight really, Mike, was the scrambling from Cam Smith down the stretch. I mean, he hit an absolutely absurdly bad tee shot on 16, the par five, and then followed it up with a punch out and maybe the best three wood of his life when he needed it. And then it just went on from there at 17, 18. The finish was immaculate.
Yeah, it really, you know, looked like Cam Smith was just consistent throughout the day. Everyone else kind of fell aside, especially when Cam put up four birdies in a row to start the back nine, I think it was. And then it looked like there was an opening with that horrible snap hook on 16, but just his continued amazing play, stuffing it close on the island green on 17, which had some of the best drama we've seen, as usual, over
great
the course of these
17,
5 days.
The
hole in one. Which is just always fantastic, and a whole lot of balls in the water by guys that were in contention.
Yeah,
and just
all three
just
guys
couldn't do it
in a group. I think on Friday or Saturday, right to start the day, just all hit it in the water immediately. That's when we knew we were in for some chaos and those wins that you mentioned. And yeah, the amazing shot on 17 for Cam Smith, and then 18, he has the awkward punch out that rolls too far. I know you and I have been there. Oh yeah, we're just chipping out. You know, oh no, we're not worried about. No, there's no way the ball is going to actually roll. It to the oh no, he had one of those moments and he survived that as well too.
Shades of just a couple players earlier and Keegan Bradley doing the same exact thing, kind of killing his chances at maybe being able to force a playoff or something. And although much bigger shades, of course, of Adam Scott, the other Australian to win the Players, doing the same thing in his final round.
Both Australians there. Yeah, that's funny. Couple of Australians, both in the water on the 72nd hole, and both get up and down with a chip and a putt to get the victory of the Players. Interesting symmetry there.
It really was. Let's talk real quick about a couple other guys that were out there in the field that played really well. Let's talk about Lahiri, the man from India who I was rooting for him for quite a while there, just to see him post some numbers up there on the leaderboard and have a chance. He unfortunately could not get close enough to make a birdie, though he had an awfully good look there with his chip in. Really wanted this to go to extra holes the way the play was going all day.
It was close. Yeah, it wouldn't have been great for fellas that record a golf podcast on a Monday night, but regardless, the chip in came just short for Lahiri. How about $2.1 million for finishing runner up though and not winning the tournament? That's a pretty good second place money for a guy that really needed it too. He'd been higher in the world rankings. I actually saw him qualify for the Dell Match Play several years ago here. So he was in that top 64 at one point. He'd fallen off dramatically in the last few years, coming back, gaining status, even playing the Monday qualifying circuit in the last year or two. This finish completely takes care of that. We know where we're going to see him play regularly for the next few years, thanks to everything he just did this week. So amazing timing by Lahiri to have that big week.
One other name, I mentioned him just a moment ago, and that was Keegan Bradley, a guy that you had the honor of getting demolished by when you were a high school golfer. He's from a native of Vermont. I just like to see that he's playing well, even with those clubs that are far too short for him and his very iconic lean over the ball that he has because of that. And I just feel like he is setting himself up to play great at the country club and win a major in New England.
Oh, I love that call. Nice look ahead to the June U.S. Open there being played in Massachusetts. First time we've seen that venue since, a little Ryder Cup, you may remember, in 1999. Mm. Pretty historic one. So it's going to be great to get back to that venue in New England. And yeah, Keegan has always had that lean, by the way. Shout out to even the 2004 state championships in Massachusetts at Franklin Country Club. He's had the lean forever. He's been dominating since his days at Hopkinton High when I saw him first. And it's cool to see him out there. And it's good to see him back on the leaderboard. He's kind of one of those pop-in guys where you don't hear his name for several months. And then he just comes to the front page of a leaderboard in a big tournament. So great to see Keegan back near the top of the leaderboard as well.
Let's talk about the Saudi Golf League, the premier golf league, whatever we're calling
it. Announcement week. That's right.
Announcement week. So they came to the podium and they told us all absolutely nothing.
Yes, there was no announcement. That was the big announcement this week from the Saudi League. I think I was one of the last ticket holders to this festival. This is officially the Fire Fest of golf, I'm calling it. I had still been holding out hope that maybe some European players were staying quiet for a little longer. They had said, Mike, Players Championship Week, we're going to rock the PGA Tour and announce this league. We got 20 guys ready to go. We're going to announce them. And alas, it looks like it's lettuce and tomato sandwiches, just like in the Fire Festival documentary. So I was scammed, I was duped, and I'm left alone right now. But unfortunately, it looks like I'm ready to put the final stake in the Saudi League. For now, at least. I think we can brush that to the side for another year or so.
I mean, Greg Norman did say this is not the end, this is only the beginning. So we'll see what the future holds. Yes.
You're going to have to head to the courtroom if you want to follow up there.
That's true. Instead of looking ahead, let's look to the past, because this week as well, one of the greatest golfers of all time, Tiger Woods, was inducted into the World Golf Hall of Fame, introduced by his daughter, Sam. And then he gave a long 17-minute speech without notes in which he had a lot of emotion. Of course, shared that great story about how with his first big paycheck, paid off the second mortgage his parents took out on the home so that he could go play. What do you think it means to be inducted into the World Golf Hall of Fame when you're only 45 and you maybe will be able to play on the PGA Tour again?
Yeah, that kind of led to the awkwardness, this whole thing. So first of all, they recently changed that age. It was 50 for the Hall of Fame. They moved it up to 45. So because of that, here Tiger Woods is giving his speech when we've heard inklings that he's trying to give this another go and come back to professional golf in some capacity. We don't know what that is, but it's just an awkward time in his career for this speech to be delivered. Indeed, the speech overall, listen, I appreciated how heartfelt it was. I love that he did focus on his roots and what got him to this Hall of Fame career. And and not necessarily focusing so much on the golf, but there was just absolutely nothing regarding the details of his golf career and everything he did on the course at all. It was definitely unscripted. He did leave the notes at home. Maybe some cliff notes would have helped guide the speech a little bit more. I won't get too petty with it, but interesting speech overall from Tiger. It was just good to see him up and walking around now. So if that's any step towards progress and a return, then I like to see it.
Let's go across to the other side of the world as well to talk about the 2022 Honda LPGA Thailand, because we had the first LPGA Tour winner from Denmark in Nanna Koerstz Madsen.
Nice
winning
job.
In her first, draining a 10-foot eagle putt on the second playoff hole. Just incredible play by Madsen here.
Eagle to win. That's always a hard O move. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That tells me, you know, you want to win the tournament is when you eagle a playoff hole in sudden death. So shout out to her for that. But 26 under, really, Mike. Again, we diatribe this all the time, but here the LPGA is just going super low. I don't even think she was the only one either. There were a lot of names there that were in the 20s under par. So the birdies were flying. You may not have seen it since a lot of the golf was overnight, but impressive stuff on the Asian swing so far from the LPGA.
It was indeed. And of course, that 26 under par set a new tournament record along with ZU Lin, who, of course, she got to play against in the playoff. This beat the mark set by back in 2018 of 25 under par that was set by none other than Jessica Korda.
Yes, that's right. Shout out to Nelly as well, too. We had a little bit of a health scare with that blood clot. I don't know if you saw that the other day, but hopefully she's recovering speedy and we see her back on the course as well.
Let's talk about this weekend's Valspar Championship. The guys that are going to make the trek from the Jacksonville area across to the other side of the state to the Tampa St. Pete area will be at Innisbrook. Don't know how many are really making this trek. I mean, there's guys that say they're going to be playing. It's who knows? Who really knows?
I do a breaking news from my phone right now as you and I talk, and it's good news too. Dylan Wu in the field as an alternate. So what happened is a lot of these guys from the Players Championship are not going to carry over after the long week and the Monday night finish. So there's going to be some dropouts. So Dylan Wu got his way in. So I'm definitely throwing a dollar there. I'm not sure where the rest of my money is going to go, but watch out for him this week at Innisbrook.
We'll have our full picks on Wednesday evening up on Twitter. We'll hold off on saying who we really think because of the potential of these guys not really being in the field.
Yes. Could be some Tuesday, Wednesday flakes for sure.
That's true indeed. For now, let's switch over to Tuned In, where we share what we're tuning into outside of the world of sports. Alex, this weekend was the Stopover Music Festival here in Savannah, which is where a lot of guys and artists come on their way to Austin for South By.
I love it. The Stopover Festival. That's awesome. Very, very adequately branded for the time of year as well, too. They know the audience they're coming after. And yeah, a lot of people heading to South By, which is, it's crazy to think, Mike, this is the first South By in 3 years in Austin. You know, you remember it's a March festival. So everything went crazy. And when South By got deleted in 2020, I knew something was going to be wrong with the future of our world. And unfortunately it was, but it's good to have the festival back. I get to go to a really cool event with some people we've had on the show as well before. It was the Country Club Adjacent Boys, really funny golf podcast that did a live show. So it was cool to go to a live podcast taping. Catch up with our friend Jake Adams, who joined the show, stand-up comedian in his own right. And Tanner Beard was there too. So it was good to connect, do a little networking, and get back into the South By feel of things.
Like it. For me, meanwhile, I got into a show that's been out for a couple weeks now. Most people have probably already watched it, and that is Pam and Tommy over there on Hulu.
Wow, look at you. Pam and Tommy. I wouldn't have taken you for a Pam and Tommy viewer, but here we are.
I mean, I think most people have seen at least some snippet or screenshot from the more infamous Pam and Tommy VHS cassette that was put out back in the day, which this series is based on. This, however, does not have the real Pam or Tommy in it. It has Lily James in an extensive amount of prosthetics and makeup looking a whole lot like Pamela Anderson.
Yes.
really, really surprising to see the transformation that she went through.
That's always crazy to see. Mike, is when you have these actors or actresses go deep into character, and it requires like 7 to 8 hours of makeup and prosthetics every single day that they have to like peel on and peel off before and after shooting. Mm-hmm. I just looked at the stills of her as Pam, and yeah, that's an impressive transformation. Damn.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. Sebastian Stan may not have had prosthetics, but he did have a lot of tattoo makeup all over his body to be the true Tommy Lee. And we see him walking around a lot in thongs in the first two episodes.
Interesting. Well, yeah. I have not watched the Pam and Tommy series, but I've seen Pam and Tommy, if you get my drift. Enjoy. Look forward to the season wrap feedback as well.
Let's get into this week's guest. Alex, you had the opportunity to chat once again with a past guest of this program, and it's none other than Pro Bowler Marshall Kent, who also just notched his fifth PBA Tour title.
Yeah, this was so cool. Got to see last weekend on Fox Sports 1 in front of fans as well, you know, in front of the crowd again, too, which is great to see. Definitely helped edge him on. He gets into that and everything that went into this amazing win. Really cool chat with a recent champion.
We'll get into that chat with Marshall Kent in just a moment. But first, we want to let you know about our favorite golf ball out there on the course, and that is the Volvic ball. They've got a couple different options for you, but they all come in really bright, different colors. You can have this unique golf ball with you, just like how Marshall Kent can have a unique bowling ball with himself out there and he's on the lanes. You can have a unique golf ball when you're playing the course. And the Volvic Vivid now comes in a multi-pack of colors. You can get
this is the styling and profiling golf ball. Mm-hmm. If you want to go ahead and like match your shirt or your pants to your ball and really have the ensemble working and also play a good golf ball, this is the one for you.
This is what I love about Volvic is they give you options. You can get yellow, orange, red, green, or if you want to really geek out, Alex, you can get a ball with Captain America, Iron Man.
You can.
A Hulk, anything from Marvel.
That's on Superman that ball. Collection. That's Superman mm-hmm. collection. I love it.
It's a lot of really awesome stuff. Volvic puts a lot of their money into their golf ball instead of their advertising. So they're not spending it there. They're spending it in the making the best high performance balls in golf. And like we said, it comes in a plethora of colors and designs. So head on over to their website, volvic.com, and get your Volvic ball. They have one for every swing and it's got great performance and it's in color. Again, that's volvic.com, performance in color.
Next up, we're welcoming back the most recent winner on the PBA Tour, a past guest who took down the Rothholman doubles with EJ Tackett. It's Marshall Kent back on the course of life. Marshall, congrats again. How is everything over there?
Thank you. It's pretty amazing. It's been a while since I won out here, and to be able to bust that slump with one of my closest friends, EJ, there's really no words that can describe how it made me feel. It was just unbelievable.
Yeah, the energy was pretty electric through the broadcast this past weekend on Fox Sports 1 as well, too. We had our mutual friend Darren Tang on the show previously when he crushed that summer series last year to get his win. I was wondering when the next win would come for you, but I knew it wasn't far around the corner. I'm curious, though, from your perspective, it had been a little bit. So what's the process been like for you getting back into the winner's circle on tour?
It's taken a lot of hard work and dedication. I made a promise to myself to dedicate myself a lot more to the sport and to practicing and training and everything a few months ago. And, I went into the season starting out, I felt really good. I liked how I was throwing it. But I just couldn't get things to fall my way first few weeks. And then all of a sudden everything just kind of lined up when EJ and I started the doubles. And luckily he was able to do his thing and strike a lot, and I contributed, but that's kind of what you have to do in a double / team event, because you're not going to both be on fire at the same time, but it's kind of like a game of ham and egg.
Yeah, it was very complimentary between the two of you indeed. And I will say for everyone who doesn't understand, I think this is pretty overdue. You guys had made it to this finals before. Well, what was the trick for finally getting it done this year?
We kind of joked about it. So we finally didn't qualify second for the stepladder.
Is that what it was? Yeah.
Yeah. So, we qualified second every single year and we finished second twice and third twice. So this is our fifth time. And we ended up qualifying fourth. And sure enough, it seems like that was really the only thing that was different, because I don't think him or I threw it any better than we had before. It's just, we had a little luck on our side this time.
Interesting. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about that stepladder format, because it is unique. Basically, the five seed starts playing the four and whatnot, and the winner moves up the ladder. I'm curious, do you notice kind of momentum being built as the lower seed? A lot of times in these formats, you see a five or a four seed kind of catch heat and it throws maybe the higher seed off guard. Did you feel a little bit of that momentum as the matches progress in the finals?
Oh, 100% for sure. Part of it was that we were able to find a look on the lanes, because they were a little trickier than they were in qualifying, but EJ figured out his lane and I figured out a little trick on mine. And we fed off the crowd very well. There was commercial breaks. We'd go into the crowd and sign some things for them and they absolutely loved it. So I feel like we had every bit of momentum on our side because the crowd was just ecstatic. And, it's hard to come into a stepladder match watching your opponent that got to you bowl a really good game, because that means they're comfortable and that puts a little more pressure on yourself to go out there and perform right away. So, and those first couple of shots on TV, I don't care how many times you've been there, they're a little nervy, especially if you haven't been on in a while. But once you get comfortable, it's very hard to beat someone that's comfortable on TV with a good look.
Were you guys really signing autographs during the commercial break? Is that serious?
Yeah, we were. Yeah,
that's awesome.
Couple of signs got our attention, and so we walked out and signed them. And and then we also got to watch a fan absolutely slam down two of his half full beers mid break.
Wow. So,
yeah. The first one, he called me out and slammed his beer, and then he called EJ out and slammed his beer. He had a bunch of his friends with him too, and that was entertaining to watch.
Definitely kept it light. Yeah, let's talk about the crowd a little bit though, because for those of us who've been watching bowling the last couple of years, we're just now in recent months seeing the crowds back lane side, and I could kind of tell. I think there was a little bit of extra energy flowing through you. Talk to me about just what it's like being back in front of the crowds. It seemed to resonate with you specifically.
Oh, we've missed it so much. We absolutely love it when fans get really into it and get pumped, and we feed off that, and we kind of work with the crowd as well. And I think because there's been a limited / no fans allowed for a while.
Yeah.
I think it makes them that much more excited to be back, and it brings that much more energy to the set. And I mean, you can feel it. It was definitely different than past shows that day. There's a lot more energy in there. It was insane.
Yeah, it shined through, and I could tell you were geared up for it. One technical thing that I have to ask about in this win you just had on the PBA tour here in the doubles with EJ Tackett. Again, we're talking with Marshall Kent. On the broadcast, they were really harping on the difficulty of the left lane, which apparently you didn't seem to have many issues with. I know you hinted after the win that there was just maybe some dumb luck involved with that, but kind of explain what was going on with the left lane and maybe why you just kind of found the right pocket that nobody else did.
Yeah, it was very tricky, because when we were practicing on it, the lanes we bowled on for the show are on a completely different side of the building than we bowled on for the qualifying and match play.
Okay.
So it's kind of a topography of the lanes issue. We felt that they definitely hooked more on the TV set, which once that left lane started hooking more, they became extremely difficult. The guys that made the show, for the most part, had a partner that could tame the left lane in qualifying match play. And, I was trying to play a little further inside for a couple shots, a little further outside. And then neither one of them looked that great. And then all of a sudden kind of nestled into that little middle lane track area sort of thing and did a little trick I learned with my hand. I walk out one to the right, came back, and I got one left, and it sat there and both hit the pocket. And I look at EJ and my ball rep, Jason Wojnar, and said, "Ooh, we got something here." And sure enough, it worked out. So I kind of got lucky and found it.
Yeah, that's interesting. Just kind of stumbling into it at the right moment, it definitely came through for you. So then you worked your way through the step ladder, making your way to the finals. I saw Sean Maldonado was a guy you played in the finals as well, too. You've seen him on a lot of broadcasts recently. I'm curious from a opponent versus opponent perspective. When I talked with Darren for his final against Troop last summer, he swears to me he was just completely 100% locked into what he was doing and trying not to focus on Troop. But what's that mentality like for you? Are you kind of looking out of the corner of your eye for their roles? Are you not watching a thing at all from your opponents? How do you kind of treat that?
Well, that day I really wasn't paying attention. You just gotta kind of stay within yourself and know that if you do everything you need to do, then it's gonna be very difficult for them to keep up. You know, we all have that killer instinct mentality out here. That's why we do this for a living. That's why we win. And but there's moments where you kind of just get in that extra little comfort / focused zone that it's not something that you really can do, you know, in the blink of an eye. It just kind of happens. And that day, both EJ and I just found that little extra focus and intensity. And it's not a feeling I can describe, or I can't do it every single day, but we both just kind of fell into that day, and then it worked out to where we never gave our opponents a chance. Rationale pulled a really good game and pulled 240, but we pulled 279. We didn't miss.
Yeah, so that was probably your moment to get clipped, was that match, if anyone, I'd say. Yeah.
I agree 100%. Yeah. And that kind of thing just happens. You know, sometimes you bowl the best game you can bowl and you don't lose, you just get beat, you know?
Yeah. I got to ask from your perspective, I know you were into it and the energy was there, but I got to talk about something I saw at EJ Tackett in his eyes. Like, there was a moment in that final where he kind of just like went like LeBron James psycho mode in the championship match. And he just decided to impose his will at one point. What's that like kind of being beside him and feeling his energy level ramp up? Because it was just kind of a look in his eyes that I don't think I'd quite seen in a while.
Yeah, it's you know, we both know that when it's time to step up and be a little extra committed in a shot, and we see it in each other's eyes. You know, if I go up and strike, I look back at him, and he knows, like, you know, yeah, make the next one really good. And after we had it locked up, after Maldonado split the ninth, there was a slight moment of relief, but we knew it wasn't quite done yet because we still had two shots to go. And so we're sitting there, and I look at him and said, "One more for show, buddy. One more going for show." And he kind of like giving me like a little nod and says, "Yeah, I know." So we just from bowling together for so many years and understanding each other personally very well, we know when we look at each other, like, it's that time, it's go time.
Nice. Awesome. Very cool stuff. It's Marshall Kent, that one bowler 300, if you want to follow on Instagram. Obviously, we got to talk about a really cool moment that happened when you got your hands on the trophy. That was huge. I obviously could tell how much it meant to you specifically. And talk to me about what it meant to you and your family. Obviously, you've had a really tough last couple of years with everything that's going on with your dad, but it was an amazing moment to see that you truly got one for him. Tell me about kind of who you thanked in the moment, what that meant to you.
It's a team effort. It's not just me that's here. It's my family too. They've always supported me for my entire career, my entire life. And without that love and support, I wouldn't be here today. I said, "Mom, Jordan, we got one for Dad," because it was a team effort, you know. And just between personal life stuff and the ball company changed as well. Just had so many odds. I feel like I had so many odds stacked against me. And to come through, just after going through all of that, it means the absolute world to me. It's a day I'm never going to forget.
Yeah, it was an amazing win. You can check out that YouTube replay as well, too, for people who didn't see the final of the Rafholman doubles. It was an impressive victory indeed. So again, congrats to you and EJ. Let's just catch up a little bit, because I know we originally had you on about a year and a half or two ago and talked a lot about your golf game. You're a big golfer in your own right. I know we're in season right now, but how's the golf game these days?
Well, I think I'm supposed to go hang out at a simulator today, so it'll be the first time I've swung in 3 months. So
okay.
I'm the S words are probably going to come out for you. It's definitely a little rusty, you know, because I definitely have my bowler swing on right now, and that's kind of not good for the golf swing. But we're going to get back to Vegas here in a few weeks and set up a couple rounds, start getting sharp again once the season's done. And yeah, it's gonna feel very awkward for the first few swings. So I don't know what to expect. It's either gonna be I'm gonna ace them, or they're just gonna go everywhere. You know? I'm gonna shoot a round of one under, but it's gonna be one under the tree, one in the water, one under the bunker. You know. One under everything.
Under, over, and all around. Yep, that's the game indeed. I know that very well. I'm curious. Yeah. I saw some tweets recently about how Vegas golf has gotten like really, really expensive. Where are you playing these days, specifically within Vegas? What are your favorite courses?
Let's see. You know, I play everywhere. I like seeing different courses. And I think the last time I actually teed it up, we played a Skins game at the Vegas Muni golf course. You know, it was a fun little track. It was a good day. But I think my favorite out of all the courses is Cascada. I mean, it's it's absolutely stunning views on that course. And we can get within 10 feet of some bighorn sheep that, you know, if they look at us the wrong way, we're kind of in trouble, because if those things buck into you, they hurt.
Oh yeah. I am interested in that experience with the wildlife for sure. Yeah. That was Darren's suggestion as well too. He loves it out there at Cascada. So that's definitely a spot to hit for the golfers out there. Curious Vegas wise, have you been to the Allegiant Stadium, the new stadium for the Raiders since open?
I have. Yeah. Yes. It's nice. Unbelievable. Yeah. Cool. We did a stadium tour one time and went to a UNLV game, and, it is one heck of a stadium. It's something that definitely need to check out in town.
And how are you with NFL allegiance? I know you have Washington background. Are you Raiders? Are you Seahawks? Where do you sit there?
Seahawks for sure. All the way. Whole life.
Nice.
We just found out we traded Russell Wilson the other day. So that was kind of a...
I was going to get your reaction to that. But, the end of an era for you guys there, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it's crazy. You know, they kind of started going when we lost Marshawn and our Legion of Boom guys. And now Russ is gone. So it's kind of a beginning of a new era, set to say the least. But, you know, it was a heck of a 10, 12 years or however long he was there for. And, you know, it was a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I think it kind of appropriately ran its course. And also, I think it just maybe feels like the right time to go separate ways. So no harm, no feeling, no hard feelings there. And I'm curious, I want to follow up on the 19th hole question I asked you when we previously had on. You vividly described that after a round of the course, you love a beer, and you described this amazing breaded teriyaki chicken dish. I think it's called Mount Fuji or something like that. Have you had that since the last time we talked?
I have not. No.
Oh man. Well,
the beer, yes. The Mount Fuji, no.
All right. Well, get some of that in your life then. Celebrate for sure. You deserve it. Again, PBA Tour champion Marshall Kent here on Course of Life. Thank you so much for hopping on, and looking forward to having you on when the next win comes around. Sound good?
Absolutely. Hopefully he's here soon.
That interview with Marshall Kent is brought to you by Club Doctor Golf, the number one golf club care solution. They've got two great products to keep your club squeaky clean. The club cleaning solution clips right onto your golf bag to make it easy to clean your clubs on the course. And their iron polishing solution restores that original shine, so you can have a club that doesn't have any dirt, grass, or grime on it. It just shines back up at you. as you look down on it. A clean club improves your club performance, your ball spin, ball speed, and control, and gives you better attitude because you know you've got a clean club down there next to the ball. So bring your clubs back to life and restore your club's original shine with Club Doctor. Either the cleaning solution or the polish is the quick and portable solution you need on the course. They are Amazon's choice for golf club polish, and they're available at clubdoctorgolf.com. And when you use the promo code COL, you'll get 15% off any purchase. That's only at clubdoctorgolf.com with the promo code COL for 15% off. Head on over to their website, clubdoctorgolf.com, and use that promo code COL for 15% off. And we're back. Great chat there with Marshall. Great to hear him just on his game and to see him winning again, too, and doing so after the death of his father, just having an emotional victory like that. I just love seeing guys that aren't jaded, you know, especially you're winning five times now. I think you might get jaded. It's good to see that he's not there.
He's not. No, it was really awesome to just see pure joy and elation from him when he won, too. You could tell he wanted it bad. It was a long time coming. So shout out to Marshall. And like we said, he's coming on for win number six. So hopefully that's not in the too far future.
That's right. And it's make sure you don't miss it. Make sure you hit that subscribe button on the podcast app that you're listening to us on right now. We'll give you 5 seconds right now. Hit that subscribe button. It's really easy. It's right there. There you go. Done. Easy. Let's move on. Let's talk football, Alex. It's been 2 months since Tom Brady announced his retirement. How do you think he's faring out there in the world of retirement land, spending a lot of quality time with his family?
Family time went very well, does it? I mean, that's the indication I'm getting.
Yeah. It seems that it's been going so well for him, he's decided to return to the NFL.
I mean, the perspective I need to take on this rant, and allow me my 2 minutes right here. You can start the clock. I'm really thinking about Giselle at this moment. I'm thinking about supermodel, wife, mother, and all around Wonder Woman Giselle Bundchen right now. She's been married to this man for a long time now, had kids together, and for years and years, she has been just pledging, begging, and pleading for her husband to get out of this dangerous game. She went on 60 Minutes and went on and on about how scared she is of her husband getting concussions and forgetting parts of her kid's life, and she wants him to be there. And for years, you could tell she couldn't wait for this career to end. When he gets to Tampa Bay and he leaves New England, he wins a new Super Bowl with a new franchise, she doesn't say congrats. She doesn't say you're amazing. She says, what more do you have to prove? I mean, this woman could not have begged any harder for her husband to retire. And finally, he retires. He's back in the house for just a month or two. And just like that, he's picking up his ball. He's bored and he wants to go play his game again. Like, just Giselle, she's got to be absolutely fuming. If it's anything like that, that's going on in the Brady house right now. Oh, I wish I could be a fly on the wall.
Yeah, I'm going to take an alternate viewpoint on this, and that is that Tom has spent the last 2 months moping around the house. He hasn't been quite as strict on his workout regimen because he doesn't have anything to look forward to. Okay. He's eaten maybe a few too many Doritos, leaving some orange stains around the couch.
Are you saying he's eating strawberries again?
I'm saying that Giselle was sitting there looking at him and going, what the hell did I do? You need to get your ass out of this house.
you're flipping this. This isn't. Oh, okay. This isn't Giselle fuming at Tom. This is just Giselle doesn't want Tom around anymore.
Yeah, I'm saying Tom has let himself go in 2 months, and Giselle is unwilling to let that happen, and just needs him out of her life for 9 months out of the year. And so it's like,
honey, I wanted you home, but I didn't necessarily want you around all the time. Exactly. I guess, is that what you're going for here?
Exactly.
Exactly. Wow. Okay. Interesting perspective there. I'm curious which one is closer to reality. But regardless, I don't think this is the last time we're going to bring up Thomas Edward freaking Brady. He's back in the NFL again. This guy just refuses to give it up.
We will talk about it more. You know what else has returned? Speaking of things returning to our world, baseball. Baseball's back, baby.
Thanks to you, I think. It seems like I've connected a couple thoughts, and your rant timed with the end of negotiations and reaching agreement there's a lot of coincidence on that timeline. Are you taking any credit for this at all at this point?
I won't say that I didn't have anything to do with it.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll leave it at that. It's impressive stuff from you. They got it together, Mike. It looks like they're only starting about a week late, April 7th start. So I think we're going to get the full 162 in, maybe a few extra doubleheaders here and there, but they did it. As weird and as confusing as it got during times of the spring, we're down in palm trees already, it looks like.
That's right. Baseball's back, baby. It's exciting. Free agent deals happening all over the place. Trades going off like a rapid gunfire. It's back with a vengeance. So
I appreciate that. I like this. I like the fire sale of the nice quick free agency period. And I know
you
like
need to do this all the time. But this needs to be the change that happens in baseball. Three-week free agency period. That's it.
It gets the buzz going. Yeah? Gets you tingling for baseball season. So hey, listen, we dumped on them the last few weeks, but when push came to shove, they got the agreement done to get them back on the field. So we'll see them out there real soon.
That's right. I'm looking forward to the Yankees beating down on your Red Sox this season.
Please.
So we'll see how it goes. You know what else had a beat down this past week? My wife's Virginia Tech Hokies played Coach K and Duke in the ACC championship game. And Coach K's miraculous career is just coming to an embarrassing end as the Hokies just smacked Duke in the face and took the ACC title.
Yeah, impressive stuff from the Hokes.
Like 20 points. It was crazy.
I did not see quite this run coming. I bet on them a couple times in the ACC tournament in the early round games. They needed a buzzer beater to win their first game of the tournament. Turned it into an entire championship run. They're on the bracket as the 11th seed now. So regardless, though, Coach K taking some real losses on the door out here. Just to rewind the clock here, remember his final game in Cameron Indoor was the embarrassment in which UNC, his bitter rival, walked into his building and laid one all over him. Okay, now we have this in the ACC tournament where the Hokies come in the championship game and lay one all over him. Are we setting up for, you know, these things come in threes, Mike? Are we setting up for the grandest of letdowns here come bracket time? I think so.
I think we could be. So let's use this as our transition into the bracket. Let's spend about 20 to 30 seconds per section of this bracket. Let's start in the West, where number two Duke is going against CSU Fullerton. I think, like you said, they come in threes. So are you going to put money on Fullerton to beat Duke?
Oh, you're not waiting. You're going first round exit.
Right now.
Oh, this is full on carnage you're predicting here. I don't think I'm going to be that bold, but as far as the West region goes, Duke's the two seed. I'm watching out for Davidson in the second round. Remember this guy named Steph Curry that played in college once?
He actually played for Davidson, and they did
some stunning of Duke, I believe, back in the day. So watch out for Davidson in round two there. I don't think Duke gets to the final four of this region, though. My other watch out team is UConn. My big upset is definitely going to be those Vermont Catamounts back in the 13th seed again.
Yeah.
This is Gonzaga's bracket, but the team I'm really liking as I'm filling these brackets out is Texas Tech. They've been to a Final Four recently. They play in the Big 12 tough, so watch out for them in the West region.
Let's move down to the East, where my wife's Virginia Tech Hokies get to play the Hook'em Horns in Texas. What are the Hokies' chances here? Do we think they're going to make a run and continue moving with this momentum?
The Longhorns' tournament record is crappy in recent years. So if that's any indication, they could pull off the first round upset. Whether they get past Purdue to get to the Sweet 16 is another question, though. I'm definitely watching Kentucky on the bottom half of the bracket. I'm usually pretty bored by Coach Cal's rosters, but he's got a lot of NBA talent as usual. I don't like Baylor, the defending champion, to come out of this bracket. The team I'm watching, Mike, is UCLA. They got to the Final Four last year. I think they're a little underseeded and they're completely healthy. So watch out for the Bruins in the East.
Let's keep going counterclockwise around the bracket and go to the Midwest, where Kansas is the number one seed in this portion of the bracket. What do you think here? Is Kansas going to run the table?
No, this is another one seed I have out by the Sweet 16. They might make it to a matchup against Providence, but Providence is my team to watch in this bracket. The winner of the Providence-Iowa game, I think most likely, could be winning this entire region. Auburn is a little bit overrated. I think if there's any big-time seed that could fall in a crazy upset, just mark down Jacksonville State. You just never know with that 2-15 matchup if you want to get loopy on your bracket. But overall, Providence is my sneaky team in this region and maybe the tournament as well.
That brings us to the final section of this bracket. That is the South section. Arizona is the number one seed up here. But I got to give a lot of love to my Tennessee Volunteers, number three seed down there.
This is a pretty good setup for the Vols. You might want to hop on that bandwagon right now if you lose the Hokies, because this works out well for them. They've been punishing teams on defense in the SEC, and they did that in the conference tournament. The matchup that we're looking at is the 3-2 matchup with potentially Villanova in the second round. Whoever's winning that game, I think, is winning the region. I don't like Arizona in this region as well. I'm not really sure about the one seeds this year, Mike. If any of this analysis is telling you anything, it's that you can be a little creative with the bracket this year. Expect some unpredictability. I've got three or four different champions based on which bracket you look at of mine. So it should be a fun, wide open March Madness.
It's going to be a thrilling weekend no matter what. So we'll see how it goes down. Let's also do a quick alma mater shout out. While our Quinnipiac Bobcats are not playing in the basketball tournaments at all, our Quinnipiac women's ice hockey team did have a shot at making the Frozen Four. Unfortunately, the double overtime thriller resulted in Ohio State taking the W, but it still resulted in like 73 saves. From Quinnipiac.
73 saves. Ridiculous stat line right there. Jesus. Okay, well, shout out to the goalie for stopping 70 out of 73 there. But yeah, the run comes to an end. Glad they did make the NCAA tournament, though. So now we rest our faith on the men, it sounds like.
That's right. They are playing in the ECAC championship games this weekend. They are in the semis, and I'm sure we'll actually win the ECAC tournament. They already won the regular season Clary Cup. Okay. And Coach Ryan Pecknold, two-time back-to-back coach of the year.
Love it.
So let's do it. Let's hashtag always end with food.
Yeah, brought to you by our friends at Toasty Bites, makers of the Toasty Pop Snacks, Super Bites, all the good healthy snacks for you on the go. They've got great flavors, and you can check them out at toasty.com/COL. Our promo code is COL20 for 20% off. We're coming up on St. Patty's Day week, Mike. I know you're in a St. Patty's Day mecca right now. It's going to get pretty crunk there in Savannah this week.
If you're not one to enjoy being around people that are just so horribly wasted drunk, then I would avoid downtown Savannah at all costs, which is exactly what I'm going to be doing from Thursday on. But I will make myself some corned beef. I will certainly do that and enjoy that on some rye bread and have a sandwich a couple times this week. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I didn't think you were going to mix it up with the belligerent degenerates downtown there. So you can take the weekend off and watch some of the tournament this weekend instead. And yeah, that sounds like a plan. I'm going to go with a little fish and chips rendition at some point this week for my shout out to the Irish pub food that I love so much. I saw on your food end, you were going sweet as usual, but you made something that was cinnamony goodness that I could not resist. Tell everyone about it.
Yeah, so I took my recipe for babka, and I miniaturized it in little 3x5 pans and made little miniature cinnamon babkas.
They're precious.
And the wife and I agree they are much better than the full-size babkas, which were also very good. These were much better in their little miniature form. It was fantastic.
I liked it. It looked like kind of something you could cut in little two or four slices if you wanted to and get creative. I mean, just the better, more shape-friendly version of the cinnamon roll, it looked like. I hope the flavor matched how beautiful it was. So if you're interested in that food content, check out Always End With Food Pod on Instagram as well, too, which is where we post our food picks and do a monthly podcast as well. For now, that's a wrap on this week's Course of Life. As for next week, it's Dell Match Play Week. It's here, so there's a lot of content coming, and Mae Brennan is our guest. We'll see you next week.